Well, good morning, church. It is so good to get to be here. My name is Dave Edwards. Everyone say hi, Dave. I want to start this morning by asking you a question. By round of applause, how many people this morning are glad that Jesus Christ is alive and well and changing lives all over the city? So, so good. The baptisms were amazing to watch, and I just want to say welcome to everybody in the East Worship Wing and Lockport and watching online. I'm so glad to get to be a part of your body. I've been here since Monday, and I've spoken to every different type of group possible. I've spoken to everyone but little kids, and which is fine because I'm single and an only child. I don't know anything about little kids. I'm going to show you my entire skill set with little kids. Ready? Hello. After that, I'm out. That's all I know. That's it. I'm done. And anyway, I'm so honored to get to stand in the pastor's place today. You have an incredible, incredible staff of pastors. I've spent time with almost all of them. You should be so proud. And just what an amazing place. And so this is what I do. I travel around and speak and live out of a bag. And I love doing what I'm doing. And I want to tell you kind of what inspired this morning. As you saw in that little sermon bumper, it said the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so, but let me tell you, before we get to that, kind of what led up to that, as I've traveled, I've run into a trend. And everywhere I go, I meet people that are clueless. All right. Now, by show of hands, how many of you guys have friends that you consider to be clueless? Anybody show of hands? Married people point at each other? Not good. And that's a bad sign, really. And I thought it was just me. Right, I thought, you know, I'm from Oklahoma, maybe that's it, you know. But I've just traveled enough to realize that we live in a world of people that don't get it. And so what I've done for this morning is, knowing I was going to be here, I built what I call an I don't get it file. They're just little things I've picked up around the country just to prove that we live in a world of people that are clueless, all right? So this is the first one that came off an airplane. That this is the safety card that they have in front of all the seat pockets. And so I didn't actually take the card because that wouldn't be Christian. And but I had him make a copy of it. So you can see right here, B737, that's the size of the plane, right? And this long piece of text right here are warning directions printed in 7 different languages, which is proof that cluelessness has gone global. All right, that's what that means, right? It all says the same thing. I'm just going to read to you what it says in English. Now, once again, these are safety directions that are in all the airplanes. Ready? I'm just going to read the top line, English part, just to prove that we live in a world of people that don't get it. If you are sitting in an exit row and you cannot read this card, so long, and good luck with that. Right. Here's one I picked up at a hardware store, and this is actually a hang tag on a lawnmower, and it's rules for safe use of a lawnmower. Now, it looks like a page out of the Bible. Look at that, 2 columns. They're all numbered, right? But it's just rules. It's 21 rules for use of a lawnmower. Rule number 9, do not use your mower at night. So no night mowing for any of you, all right? Rule number 21, do not use your mower indoors. So if you go back home after church today and one of your family members is trimming the shag with a push mower, you can be like, you don't get it, and all right? This is my point. We live in a world of people that are clueless. You have to tell people sometimes the most obvious things ever, right? Here's one I picked up at traveling. Of course, I live in hotels. I mean, I don't really have a choice. And I was at I forget where it was now, but I was at some hotel, and I went to do laundry, right? And so I walk in the little laundry room, and they've got a sign, this little sign above the washer and dryer. And so, once again, it's rules for safe use of a washing machine. I'm not going to read all these. I'm just going to read the one that was the most disturbing. All right. Under it has a list of do's and a list of don'ts. All right. Under the don'ts, do not add gasoline or explosives to the washing machine. I have to say that frightens me. And the fact that that is in print means that there's somewhere some guy has said to himself, you know, I think dynamite make a great fabric softener. No wonder my shirt's so soft, I've blown the back out of it. Right? And this is a just to prove to you that people that don't get it also hold day jobs. And this is an actual letter from the Department of Social Services in Greenville, South Carolina. It was sent to an actual guy, all right, written by an actual person. And once again, I'm just going to read it to you, all right? I'll just read it, and you just tell me if you get it. All right, so this is sent to a guy named Al Palanza Jr., South Carolina, such and such, all right? And it says, Dear Mr. Palanza, your food stamps will be stopped effective March 2010 because we received notice that you passed away. May God bless you, and you may reapply if there's a change in your circumstance. You just want to go, you don't get it, do you, right? I mean really. And so the point of that letter is when Jesus comes back, he gets to get his food stamps back. And, right? So now, here's why. This is all going somewhere, right? When I started finding this much stuff, I thought, you know, if you got to tell somebody not to put dynamite in a washing machine, really, come on, and not to use your mower indoors, right? That tells me there's a lot of different things in life that people can be clueless about, right? Some of us, when it comes to politics, we don't get it. Some of us, when it comes to relationships, we don't get it, right? Some of us, when it comes to our job, we don't get it. But one of the most common things that people can be clueless about is what it really means to get it spiritually, how we really dial in to the presence of Jesus. And this and that kind of clueless runs the spectrum. There's lots of people that have maybe been in church their whole life and still kind of clued out of really what it means to get clued in. There's some people, man, they're brand new to this whole deal, kind of brand new to this whole environment, and they're still trying to get a clue. And so this morning, I want to talk to us about the cure for spiritual cluelessness, right? What's the cure for that, right? How do we get clued in to the presence of God? What's that really take? And so when I started finding this much stuff, letters and warnings and signs and all this kind of stuff, I thought, you know, there's got to be a story in Scripture about people that are clueless, right? I mean, if it happens this many times in life, that's usually a sign that God wants to say something. And so I found a story in the New Testament about a moment when the disciples were a little clueless. Now, before I read this line to you, let me give you a little background. Jesus has been speaking all afternoon long. So Jesus was a traveling speaking rabbi. That's what he did, right? So he's been out speaking to about 4,000 people or so. He gets done speaking and he decides he wants to feed everybody. And by the way, this is where the tradition of eating after every church service comes from. All right. So, right, Jesus made it up. They preach a little bit, go to lunch. That's how that is, right? So, right, he turns to his disciples and he said, hey, let's feed everybody, right? There's 4,000 people. Did y'all bring any food? And they were like, no. And he was like, why don't you go find some, right? The disciples scurried to the crowd. They come up with a few loaves of bread. They bring the bread back to Jesus. And he takes the bread and he starts to tear it. And as he tears it, the bread begins to multiply. Now, in this story, the disciples become the waiters, right? They come to Jesus. They take the bread out of his hands. And they turn around and they start to serve it to all these 4,000 people. And they repeat that action until the Bible says everybody was fed and they picked up 7 baskets of leftovers. Okay, everybody say 7. 7, right? They pick up 7 baskets of leftovers. So everyone's heard Jesus preach, right? They've all been moved and stirred. They've been fed. Everybody, it says, and he sent them back home. And Jesus and the disciples get into a boat to go to his next speaking stop. right? So they push away from the shore, and they're out in the middle of the water. They're not quite to where they're going to land yet. And this is where we pick the story up. And this is how we know for this moment of time, the disciples were a little bit clueless. Now, these are the guys that watched Jesus feed 4,000 people. They picked up 7 baskets of leftovers. Here we go. This is Mark chapter 8, verse 14. And they had forgotten to take bread and did not have more than 1 loaf in the boat with them. These are the same guys that just picked up 7 baskets of leftovers. And between 12 of them, they bring 1 loaf. Now they're all in a panic. They're like, I thought you got the bread. I got the boat. He got the anchor. He got the sail. You were supposed to get the bread, right? And they start to freak out over the fact that there's 12 of them and they just have 1 loaf of bread. And in the middle of all this, Jesus speaks to them. So this brings us, if you're a note taker, all right, and when you walked in this morning, if you got one of the little bulletins, inside there's a place to take notes. And so I want to give you a three-step cure for cluelessness. Ready? What is the cure for spiritual cluelessness? Well, here we go. Number one, we have to listen to the warnings of Jesus. We have to listen to what he's saying. Right, the disciples are in the boat and they're going, wait a minute, I got the anchor, he got the boat, he got the sail. I thought you got the bread, right? They're all freaking out. And Jesus says, gentlemen, look at this, verse 15. And he was giving them orders or warnings, saying, watch out, right? That's a warning. Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. Now look at verse 16, look at their response. And they began to discuss the fact with one another, they had no bread. And this is how it goes, ready? They're in the boat. They're all freaking out. They're like, wait a minute, I got the boat, he got the anchor, he got the sail. You were supposed to get the bread. What are we going to do? There's just 12 of us. We got 1 loaf of bread. And now with Judas in the boat, we're not going to have any, right? And I mean, they're all freaking out, right? And Jesus goes, gentlemen, look out. Beware the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. All the disciples look at each other and look at Jesus and go, but I thought you got the bread. You were supposed to get the bread. I got the boat, right? They don't even respond to anything he said. They totally ignore him, right? In other words, the first step to cure spiritual cluelessness is you have to listen to the warning of Jesus. Jesus is not warning these guys about a whole bunch of stuff, right? He's not giving them multiple warnings about their emotions or whether they're, you know, coming unglued or warnings about bread. You know what the warning is about? It's about one thing. Their relationship with him. He says, guys, don't let the poison, that word leaven means poison, right? And he identifies 2 groups of people in that little verse. Look at this. And he says, beware, look out, beware of the leaven, the poison of the Pharisees and the poison of Herod. Those are 2 ways to have a really terrible relationship with Jesus. There are 2 approaches that don't connect us to his presence. For instance, on one side, you got the Pharisees, right? The Pharisees were moral do-gooders, right? They were professional do-gooders. They made up rules and they kept them. When they ran out of rules, they made up more rules. That's what they did. And Jesus himself said they were the hardest people he ever tried to reach because many times, man, they on the outside, they did all the right things, but on the inside, their heart wasn't in it. And there's lots of times in scriptures where Jesus would have arguments with these Pharisees and they'd be no further away than I am from this table. And the Pharisees would argue with him and have no idea who he was. And Jesus says to the disciples, hey, don't let that poison get into your life. In other words, don't be like a Pharisee where you just get good at going through the motions, but the motions don't have any meaning. And I bet some of us have grown up and you learned what to do in a church service or at some type of liturgy, and you kind of learned how to do all that, but your heart's never been stirred. It's not personal. And Jesus says to these guys, don't forget your relationship with me. Don't let that poison of the Pharisees get into you where it's all just kind of style with no substance. It's all just words with no power. And then the other group he identifies is the poison of Herod. Herod was the king that claimed to be looking for Jesus, but he was looking for Jesus for all the wrong reasons, right? He was looking for Jesus at his birth to try to kill him. Herod was really social, very, very much into the culture, and for Herod, Jesus was just a distraction, right? Jesus was just an add-on. It was just something in the mix.
I bet we got some people in the house that maybe you kind of know Jesus in a cultural way. Maybe you know the story, kind of know the storyline. You know the Christmas story and the Easter story, and Jesus is somewhere in the mix of your life. But man, it's not personal. You really don't know him. You just know about him. And Jesus' warning to the disciples and to us this morning is don't forget your relationship. To all of us, church, to all of us listening online in Lockport and the East Worship Room, has there been a moment where you've entered into a personal relationship with Jesus? That it's not just cultural and it's not just something that you kind of do, but it doesn't really impact your life. But man, has there been a moment where your life and the life of Jesus has collided? The warning is about relationships. Right? See, the disciples are freaking out because they don't have enough bread. So in this little story, the bread represents the unmet needs. So all of us are probably facing unmet needs somewhere in our life this morning. Right? But here's what happens to all of us. Ready? We have an unmet need somewhere in our life. We get preoccupied by that unmet need. It gets bigger and bigger until it takes up all of our time and emotion and energy, right? And usually when we get to that point of panic over an unmet need, the first thing that most people sacrifice in order to work out their life is their relationship with Jesus. We have an unmet need in our life, physical, financial, emotional. We get preoccupied with that unmet need. It gets bigger and bigger until it's all we can think about. We think, man, I believe in Jesus, and I believe in that story, but man, I kind of got to concentrate on this part of my life. I'm all for believing that he died for the world and that he rose again, but I got my marriage and our finances and job, and I kind of got to do this. You know what most people do is they push Jesus to the background of their life. And anytime we get into that place, man, people start to make really careless decisions. We have an unmet need. We get preoccupied with that unmet need. It gets bigger and bigger until it's all we can think about. And then we find ourselves compromising in order to meet those needs. And God sends people through our lives, friends, family members, unfamiliar speaker people, right? Through our lives to warn us and to say, look out. Don't forget your relationship. Don't forget your relationship with Jesus. Now, I grew up in a single parent home. Yesterday we did a single summit here at the church. It was phenomenal. We did a great turnout. It was really incredible. And, you know, that's my demographic. I'm unmarried. I grew up in a single parent home. So I kind of get all that, you know. And being raised by my mom, Saturdays at the house growing up were errand day, right? That was the day that we went and ran errands. So I would get in the car with my mom. Of course, my mom's driving, right? We're on the way to the store. And as we're driving to the store, some random rodent shoots out in front of the car. And my mom jams on the brake. And to save my life, does anybody know what she would do? Anybody? Let's see it. Right here, right? This is the first passenger side airbag, right? That's it, right there. No helmets, no knee pads, just mom's arm, right? And my mom is an athlete, all right? So she's always been in shape. So she'd mash on that brake and swing her arm across the seat. Like, I was like, well, I didn't fly through the windshield, but you caved my chest cavity in. Thank you. Right? Well, let me show you how this hooks together. Ready? We have an unmet need. We get preoccupied with the unmet need. It gets bigger and bigger until it's all we can think about. We start to make careless decisions in our relationships, careless decisions financially, and the Spirit of God throws his arm out across us and says, look out, beware, don't forget your relationship, don't forget your connection to Jesus. But somebody who's clueless spiritually will push those warnings aside and power right through life. If we're going to cure our cluelessly spiritual condition, you've got to listen to the warnings of Jesus. The warning is, do you have a personal relationship? Not one like a Pharisee where it's all external. Not one like Herod where it's just all social. But is it personal? Or are you just powering through life and God keeps putting warnings in front of you saying, don't forget your relationship. Don't forget your connection. Don't forget to ask him to step out of heaven and to step into your heart. You've got to listen to the warning of the heart of Jesus today. Don't forget your relationship. Not only that, but the second cure for cluelessness, not only to listen to the warnings, but to let go of worry. Let go of worry, which is easier to teach than it is to do. right? I mean, so the disciples are in the boat. They're all freaking out about the fact they have no bread, and they're talking with each other, right? They start it in verse 14. Jesus warns them in verse 15. They ignore him in verse 16, right? They keep talking about the fact they have no bread, and Jesus is watching this. Now, look at this. Look at verse 17. And Jesus, aware of this, said to them, "Why do you discuss the fact that you have no bread?" He's like, guys, what are you worried about? Look at this. Why do you discuss the fact you have no bread? Do you not yet see or understand? Do you have a hardened heart? Now, if you're a note taker, let me give you a definition for worry. Worry is trying to solve our problems our way without factoring in the help of God. That's what worry is. Worry is looking at our unmet needs, right? We get preoccupied with our unmet needs. It gets bigger and bigger to us, all we can think about. And our response is, what am I going to do about this? How am I going to work this out, right? Worry is trying to solve our problems our way without factoring in the presence of God. I'm just curious. By show of hands, how many of you guys have somebody in your family that is a championship worrier? Anybody? Like, if they can't find something real to worry about, they'll just make something up. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Right? My mom is a bit like that, right? She's a bit of a worrier. And so, you know, little obscure things become overly important to her. I was home last December for the holidays, because I'm good like that. And I was in my mom's guest bathroom. And you guys have a guest bathroom in your house? The one with the towels and the soap you can't use? What is that, a museum? What's happening with that? Why can't I use it? Right? So I'm standing in the bathroom. Bathroom door open, hallway on that, you know, running down the middle of the house. I'm brushing my teeth, right? Brushing my teeth. I'm just going to do my little interchange with my mom, ready? So I'm brushing my teeth. My mom walks down the hall and goes, "You better be careful." I went, "What is it?" She said, "You could slip and grab an ice pick and poke your eye out." I went, "What?" Just like this, she goes, "It could happen." I was like, next time I brush my teeth, I'll make sure not to use an ice pick. And that explains where the blood's coming from, right? But in her mind, that was real. Right? Worry has a way of inflating things and making them seem more severe than they are. And our response is, what am I going to do about this? Right? The disciples are in the boat going, what are we going to do about this? How are we going to work this out? Now, here is the irony of the story. Are you ready? These guys are worrying about the fact that they have no bread while they're in the boat with the bread of life. This is why Jesus says, guys, what are you worried about? Doesn't this describe us at different times in our life? Haven't we been freaked out about something while Jesus is in the midst? I came here this morning to tell you that Jesus is in your boat. That he knows what you're facing. He knows what you're feeling. He knows what you're fighting with. Jesus is in your boat and he hasn't left you there. But in my mind, every time I read this story, I imagine the disciples kind of at the front of the boat and Jesus is at the back of the boat and they're all kind of, you know, huddled around looking at each other and talking about the fact that the 7 baskets are on the shore and they can't go back and they just had the 1 loaf and what are they going to do? And Jesus is in the back of the boat going, guys, what are you worried about? To every mom and dad and grandparent in the house, to every college student and high schooler watching and listening in one of the other locations, Jesus is in your boat. He hasn't left you to work your marriage out by yourself. He hasn't left you to work your job out by yourself. He hasn't left you to push through that pain or that grief or that loss by yourself. Man, Jesus is in the boat with you. But a lot of times, we just haven't turned around to acknowledge it. It's not, this is why Jesus says, guys, don't get like a Pharisee where you're just going through the motions, but there's no relationship, where it's just all kind of type and shadow with no real substance. Jesus is in the boat, and for some of us, that's my only message. That some of you, God got you in this room today to hear that for no other reason, just to know that Jesus is in the boat with you. And there is a point where we have to take the issues of our life, the bread issues, the unmet need issues, and to trust them to him. And to trust him with our life. The cure for cluelessness is to listen to the warning. Don't forget your relationship. Let go of worry. To let the presence of Jesus intersect with what you're facing and feeling and fighting and having to walk through. And to know that, man, he's in the boat with you. And then finally, the third step for curing spiritual cluelessness is that we have to look at the work of God. We have to look at the work of God. Now, you would think at this point, right, Jesus has tried to reason with them. He's warned them. And they're totally disconnected, right? They don't get it. You would think there should be some sort of translation of this story in some Bible that would say, and Jesus lost his cool and said unto them, everybody get out of the boat, right? I mean, you think there'd be a moment where he would say, I can't believe you guys can't get this, right? Some of you guys are going to start the church. Some of you guys are going to write part of the Bible, right? And you can't get this simple lesson. That's it. Everybody get out of the boat. Just everyone get out of the boat. Swim back to the shore. Better yet, you guys stay here. I'll walk on ahead. And, right? But here's why this matters, right? There's no place in this story where Jesus ever loses his cool with these people. He doesn't kick us out of the boat when we're clueless. Jesus doesn't give up on us when we're slow learners. When we keep having to repeat the same lesson and fight the same struggles. And Jesus is going, guys, don't forget who's in the boat with you. Right? He doesn't give up on us. He doesn't disqualify us. And Jesus doesn't yell at these people or at us. He doesn't lose his temper. Right? You know what he does with the disciples? He gives these guys a math test. Now, by show of hands, how many of you guys remember taking math in school? In some grade, math, anybody? Was anybody bad at algebra? Anybody bad? I have to say I was terrible at all that stuff. Everyone told me, you're going to need algebra. You need to take algebra. The only time I've ever used algebra is when I had to fill out a job application and put my name next to the X. X equals Dave Edwards. And that was the only time it really ever came in handy for me. Right? And I was terrible at all tests. Like, can anybody remember ever failing a test in a certain subject? Anybody? Like in class? Oh yeah, that's my demographic. And right, I was short attention span guy. I struggled with dyslexia. So taking tests from me were terrible, right? And if I didn't know the answer, I'd just make one up, right? So I got those questions like, when was the ice age? And I'd put in the winter. And I was like, I don't know. You know, or when did Pharaoh die? And I was like a few days before his funeral. And I was terrible at biology. I got those biology questions like, name something commonly found in a cell. And I put prisoners. And why is that wrong? But I was especially bad at math word problems. Anybody remember math story problems? Anybody? Right? For someone who's short attention span to try to dial into that craziness, right? And there are always these convoluted stories, like if Bill gets on a train going 17 miles an hour, and right there, I would click off. I was like, I don't know. You know what I would do? I'd just make up an answer. I would just write down, Bill wouldn't tell me where he was going. It would be rude to ask. Who wants to ride a train that'll go 17 miles an hour? What a dumb ride that would be. All right. So this is what Jesus does. He gives these guys a math test. All right, and I'm going to read these two verses to you. And I want you to tell me if this doesn't sound like a math word problem. So they're still floating around the boat. Right? They haven't landed. They're still floating around. They're totally kind of, what are we going to do? We're going to starve. We're going to die. It's not going to work out. Right? And Jesus says, okay, everybody, gather around, right? It's kind of Jesus' way of saying, follow the breadcrumbs, right? You see what I'm saying? Verse 19, right? So they're all kind of listening to him. Verse 19. And when I broke the five loaves for the 5,000, how many large baskets full of broken pieces did you pick up? Sounds like that, doesn't it? Sounds like a math word problem, right? And they said to him, 12? And Jesus is like, that's right, let's go the bonus round. Question number two. Verse 20. And when I broke the seven for the 4,000, how many large baskets full of broken pieces did you pick up? And they said to him, 7? And every time I read the story at this point, I imagine Jesus going, He's waiting for them to clue in, right? He's waiting for them to get a clue. Listen to the verse again. Listen to the, here's the operative word, verse 19. When I, he's talking about himself. Look at verse 20. Look at this. When I, right? He's saying, guys, the first time you had an unmet need and you brought that need to me, what happened? They said, you took what little we got and you turned it into something and we had leftovers. And he says, that's right. And he said, the second time you faced an unmet need and, man, you were tempted to get preoccupied with it and it got so big, you thought, man, what I'm holding in my life is not enough to deal with what I'm facing. It doesn't match. I got a little and life is full of way more than what I got. And he says, when you gave it to me, what happened? And they said, well, you took what little we got and you turned it into something and we had leftovers. And he says, that's right. Jesus was trying to get these guys to see that it wasn't the bread that fed those people. It was him. You can clap for that. That's a good word. He'd already done this miracle twice. That's why he referenced them, both of them, right? Why couldn't he do it a third time? Why didn't he just go, just give me that loaf and go, gee, gee, gee. And by the time they landed, they had a boatload full of bread, right? He's already done it twice. Why not a third time? I'll tell you why. Because he was trying to get these guys to make the connection between him and the bread of life. There's a connection. See, all of us, what we do is we think, man, if I get my bills paid, I'd be happy. If my kids would behave, if my spouse would change a little bit, if I could just work all this stuff out, then I'd be happy. But there's a connection between what's going on in our life and who Jesus is. And the reason why he didn't perform this miracle a third time was because he was trying to get these guys to stop looking at his hands and to look at his face. For them to move into a place where their relationship with him became personal. And I wonder if we got some people in the house and watching online and at Lockport that, man, there's never been a moment where the presence of Jesus has become personal. That maybe you know about him in a religious way, or maybe you know about him in a cultural way, but you've kind of just gone from year to year in your life trying to work everything out, going, what am I going to do, and how's this going to work out, while Jesus is in the boat going. Right? He's waiting for us to turn around and to do what the disciples had done twice before. Jesus, we don't get a lot. This is all we really have. Would you take it and do something with it? And to say, God, here's the shape my life's in. Good, bad, right or wrong, close to him or far away, with a deep understanding of God or no understanding. To say, God, here's the condition of my life. Would you just enter into it? Would you be the bread of my life? There's some places in Scripture that call that having Jesus be the Savior, asking him to take control of your life. I wonder if we got some adults and some students that there's never been a moment where Jesus has become personal. There's never been a moment where you've entered into a relationship with him, that you just know about him or you know of him. But you'd have to say up to this point, I've just kind of been doing the best I can with what I got. And when the disciples gave Jesus what little they got, he turned it into something great. And when we're willing to give Jesus our life, whatever shape it may be in, he enters into it and does amazing things. Amazing things. The baptisms are, you can clap for that if you'd like. The baptisms are proof of that. That people have taken what little they got and they said, I don't know what to do with it. Jesus, I give it to you. This morning, my message this morning is simple. It's just about welcoming the presence of Jesus to be the bread of your life. To let all the unmet needs and the stresses and the worries and the problems and the frustration be the catalyst that drives us into a relationship with him. And so the question then is, how do we get from where we are to where he is? Maybe we're at the front of the boat and Jesus is somewhere at the back and we've been looking at our lives on our own terms and strictly out of our own strength. And to turn around and to acknowledge Jesus to be the leader, the navigator of our boat. Bible says the way that happens is when we're willing to believe that he is the Son of God, that he died on a cross and rose again. And that verse says, and ask him. Just like the disciples had done and said, here's what little we got. Will you take it and do something? And that we do that with our hearts this morning and say, God, here's what condition my life is in. I'm not particularly close to you. I'm not really religious, but would you just take my life and do something with it? And so what I'd like to do this morning is to navigate us through a simple prayer to open our life to the bread of life. So I'm going to ask if you would, just for a moment, to bow your heads and close your eyes with me. And if you can't ever think of a time where you've asked Jesus to be the leader of your boat, the navigator, maybe you felt like you've just been adrift in life and kind of pushed around by the waves of culture and pushed around by every crisis that comes your way, and you know, the storms have crashed up against the boat, which is your life, and you've kind of tried to hold on and to paddle your way through it. And maybe this morning, you need to let Jesus take control of your life. To say, God, I can't steer this thing. I don't know how to make this work. I don't have a lot, but what little I get, I'm just going to give it to you. So if you've never opened your life to Christ, or maybe you've just lived a certain way for so long that you're not even sure if you are a believer, and you kind of are in that space where you go back and forth, where you, like, one day you believe you're a believer and the next day you're not sure and you're just kind of unsettled, and I'd like for you to pray this prayer with me as well. Maybe you just came to watch someone be baptized, and for you, man, there's never been a moment that you've opened your life to Christ, and this is your morning. And so I'm just going to step us through a simple prayer. And I'm going to say it slowly enough this morning that you can hear it in your head and hear it in your heart. Because anytime we talk to God, God listens to two parts of our life. He listens to our thoughts, and he listens to the cries of our heart. And so I'm just going to say this prayer slowly enough that you can feel these words in your heart and hear them in your head. And the reason why they work is because there's a verse in the New Testament that says, whosoever will call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. Whosoever, that's all of us. We'll call, we'll ask him up on the name of the Lord. That means to ask him to be the bread of your life, the one who can control the boat, who can navigate our life through the storms. Whosoever will call upon the name of the Lord, that verse ends by saying, will be saved. You know what that means? That you get to start again. You get to start fresh. So if you've never prayed a prayer like that, or if you've just been in a space where you think, man, I don't know. I just don't know where I stand. But I want to know, that I'm going to invite you to pray this with me. Would you just say, dear Jesus, I believe you are the Son of God. I believe you died on a cross for me. And I believe that you're alive. And as best as I know how, I give you control of my life. Step into my boat and be the leader and the Lord of my life. If you just prayed that prayer along with me and you meant it with all your heart, I'm going to ask you just to put your eyes, just to lift your head for a moment and look right here at me. If you just prayed that prayer and you meant it with all your heart, I just want you to look right at me. If you got your eyes on me, would you just raise your hand up just for a minute? Just give me a little pageant wave. If you just prayed that prayer, would you just keep your hands up just for a minute? Anybody else? Many, many hands all over the room. In just a minute, one of the pastors is going to come and tell you the best way we'd like to know about your decision and help you connect your life to the life of God in even a more deeper way. And so one of the pastors is going to be here in just a moment to tell us how to do that. For every one of us that are facing unmet needs in our life, let Jesus be the bread of that crisis. Jesus is in your boat, but will you turn around and give him your unmet need and give him your struggle, give him what little you got, and to say, Jesus, you be the bread of my life. You be the bread of my life. And God, I pray for all of us that are facing things that have taken the breath out of us and knocked the hope out of us. And I pray this week would be different as we remember that you're in our boat. and that you have not left us alone. And in your strong and powerful name, I pray. Amen. Amen. Blessings on you, church. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jay. Thank you, man.
Hey, before we're dismissed, I want to take just a second to say to those of you that are here on this campus or who are at our Lockport campus who are watching online or in the East Worship Center, this is the kind of message that calls us to respond. And there were some of you in this room, and there were some of you at the Lockport campus, maybe you're online, maybe you're at the East Worship Center, that when Dave just said he wanted you to pray this with him, and there wasn't any magic in what he was saying, he was just leading you to a place of acknowledging your need for Jesus. If that was you, and just a moment ago you lifted your head or lifted your hand, regardless of where you are, I want to encourage you to follow through on that, because what we want to do is we want to help you in that journey in your walk with Jesus. This isn't something that you're to go at alone. Jesus certainly is in the boat with us, and he wants to walk with us, but he's also put people around us in the journey that we're on to share life with. And I want you to be understanding that we're here to serve you. We want to help you understand what it means to walk with Jesus. So if you're on this campus, when we dismiss in just a second, I want you to come by the fireside room. It's clearly marked. It's right out in the atrium. You'll see a big sign that says fireside room. And there'll be some pastors and some prayer partners in there who would love to take just a few minutes and talk to you about what that means to begin walking with Jesus. They'll probably send you home with something that's going to help point you into places in the scripture where you can read and learn more about what that looks like. You're not having to sign up for anything you don't want to sign up for. There's no hook in that. You're not going to be in like a dark, scary room. It's not that, all right? This may be new to some of you. You've come as a guest today, and we're so glad that you're here. But I want you to understand that to follow Jesus, there couldn't be an easier place to do that than here. We're like on your team. It's a different place when we walk out in the world that we live in, or the jobs that we're in, or the schools that we're in, or whatever. Sometimes it's more challenging there. But here, we're on your team. So I encourage you, if you're on this campus, come by the fireside room. If you're at the Lockport campus, you're going to get instruction of the best way to connect with a pastor or a prayer partner there. And if you're online, I want you just to connect to that tab that says Knowing Jesus. And you'll have an opportunity to learn some things and for us to be able to follow up with you. But thanks for listening and receiving. We were praying for you this morning. Dave and I were praying for you this morning that the seed that was planted would fall on fertile soil, that we would all receive it. And God has something. I'll tell you, when you said just a moment ago, Dave, when you said he was trying to teach them to stop looking just at his hand and look at his face, something registered with me. I mean, just that landed for me. How often do I do that? That I'm looking at Jesus for what's in his hand, and thank God for what's in his hand. But I forget about sometimes the relationship that I have with him, to look at his face. It was a great reminder and a great word, that piece, for me. And I'm praying that God used his word to speak into your world today. I also want to remind you, as we're walking out the door, for those of you who made decisions, we look forward to seeing you. Also want to remind you that if you want to take some of Dave's stuff home and his insights that you think will be helpful for you, there's a table right back out there that you'll be able to do that and connect with him. And I'm sure he'll be floating around there as well. Hey, God bless you. Wonderful, wonderful to see you today. Enjoy the day. Look forward to seeing you next week. God bless you. You're dismissed.